The Guardian.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes creating a professional website for your business, personal brand or portfolio so easy it's newsworthy. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer Guardian to get 10% off.
Football Weekly Extra. Today, big Monday night in Manchester leaves Chelsea a little hoarse, while there's goodbyes for Mickey Laudrup and a man as pointless as silver polish at the Emirates, Joe Kinnear. Pod salutes the legends and then previews the weekend. Chelsea Newcastle. Newcastle battling Londoners. Story of the season, really. Liverpool Arsenal. Everton Spurs. Will the Sherwood dip continue? And the South Wales derby. Will Gary Monk bring the winning habit? Will it be monkey magic? Or is he an erroneous monk? All that plus cup news across the continent. Beckham in Miami and a special report on the tightest league in Europe in Football Weekly Extra. Hi, everybody. With us today, Ian McIntosh.
Hello.
Paul Doyle.
Hi.
Hi, and Barry Glendinning.
Hello.
Hi, Barry. That's not a bad approximation of an Ian McIntosh. Give it a little bit more.
Hello.
There we go. There we go. Tell you.
It's what. Not nasally in Essex enough.
A bit more Ken Livingstone.
Hello. Lovely. Are you everyone well?
Yeah, good.
It's been quite an exciting week, isn't it?
There's lots going on. Lots of departures all over the place.
Yeah, really. Really. And fixtures coming up. Why fix your computer with these big, big games? You're spoiling us because all up and down the league, there's massive games going on.
We teams playing other teams.
Teams playing
games
other
of
teams.
Football. It's bonkers.
Mm, it really is. There's several big stories during the week. Of course, that thriller at the Etihad on Monday night. We'll come to that a little bit later on. But Michael Laudrup's departure at Swansea, that was one of the big stories of the week. And Barry, here's Hrithik Dancy saying that
not his real name, I suspect.
It might well be. Saying that you called Laudrup out as being a disaster back in 2012. When you said that, asked Hrithik Dancy, was it based on the stories we're hearing now? Do you remember this, Barry? I don't recall this.
I remember this.
Well, I called him out and I was wrong because he did very well and won the Capital One Cup. So, but I did say at the start of this season as well, I thought the wheels would come off. And it wasn't because I was being stubborn and just was going to keep saying it until it happened. Mm. In his previous gigs with Spartak Moscow, Getafe and Mallorca.
Okay.
He has done well for a season and then it's all gone wrong for him.
Right. There you go. Anyway, he's out. And now all these...
Sorry, I was just going to say that in those cases, there were some mitigating factors.
There were, yes.
The owners that he was working with at the time were not the easiest people in the world to get on with. However, in this case, Swansea are probably one of the best run clubs in the country. Or another country, if you want to put it that way. And so it really doesn't reflect well on him.
I think that's part of the problem, though, that the that obviously through Swansea's past, they have every right to be cautious. They almost went out of existence. And if there has been a disparity between what Laudrup wants to do to go forwards and what Swansea want to do to stop exploding in a pile of IOU notes, that's, you know, Swansea's right.
What did Laudrup want? He didn't seem especially bothered. It's funny how once this story's, once his departure has gone through, there's this flood of stories about
it. But you can certainly see why he wanted to keep his agent. Who Swansea weren't terribly enamoured with, but he got a 4.5 million payoff as a result of being sacked.
I mean, his recent results have been dire. They've only won 1 in 10, as has been well documented, but they're doing okay. Like, they're doing very well in the Europa League. They're still, like lots of other teams, mid-table and could quite easily avoid relegation, and they're still in the Cup. So, considering where they were 10 years ago, that's pretty all right.
Right. Well,
they've had a lot of injuries this season, and suddenly there are suggestions that a lot of those guys are on the verge of returning.
It's right.
Curious.
Well, Vorm and Michu.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that would certainly be a massive boost to them. They are, as you say, reasonably mid-table, in 12th place, only 2 points though above the drop, because the bottom half of the table is very, very tight. Dante meets Bosch. Post-sim with, I had been thinking that Laudrup was going to escape the curse of the League Cup, but it just about got him in the end. Four of the last five managers to win the League Cup were gone by the following Christmas, with only Alex Ferguson able to cling on to his job. How about that?
Well, that means Gus Poyet or Manuel Pellegrini will be gone by.
It's probably will be broken.
It's probably about a similar percentage of managers who didn't win the League Cup have also been sacked at that time.
Managers in general.
Yeah, 80%. That's right. About to go.
Well, anyway, it's all very exciting now because Gary Monk now takes over, and that's quite a leap, is it not?
Well,
for Gary?
Yeah, I don't know if he has done coaching badges or anything.
He has.
Right, okay. Mm. Well,
he's doing them, I think, at the moment.
Yeah, he's on his UEFA A at the moment, but he's not been on it very long. So he's in that Tim Sherwood window where you're allowed to be a manager as long as you promise to keep up with your studying.
And put the brick down and that kind of thing.
it is interesting, though, because of the teams who have changed managers so far this season, the two that have had the most success have been the two that went for experienced managers, Poyet and Pulis.
Right.
Whereas Fulham, Cardiff, I mean, it's early days, obviously, for them all, and Sherwood, to an extent, have been less convincing.
Sherwood's been reasonably successful, though, in the league, surely?
Yeah, it's too early to draw any conclusion.
All right.
But he hasn't been a runaway triumph.
Right.
They've been beaten by every decent team they've faced.
It is going to be an interesting predicament, though, for Gary Monk, because it does seem pretty clear that there were divisions within the team and a bust-up at the training ground, specifically involving him and one of the key players. So, in terms of him coming in and uniting the team and all marching forward ahead of this South Wales derby, it's going to be an interesting one. What do we think about this when they face the not altogether convincing Solskjaer Cardiff?
Well, Monk hasn't played that much this season. He may become a permanent fixture in the team now. Who knows about he looked quite convincing at the footage I saw of him yesterday with troops standing around hanging on his every word as he pointed his finger in an authoritative manner, which suggested morale was quickly being restored.
Well, they need that because they need to get their passing back on track. Because I mean, I haven't seen them week in, week out this season, but when I've seen them in the slump, their passing's been all over the place. Leon Britton doesn't seem to have played quite as much as he was last season, and he tended to be the sort of starting pivot for everything that they did. So if he can get them passing again, that might be the way forward.
Mm-hmm. Might be. In other way forward news, Dennis Bergkamp's been linked with a position there. That's quite exciting.
Well, it's not if they qualify for Europe and have to fly somewhere far away.
Mm. Yes. But
that seems quite unlikely.
All right.
There's a lot of eccentric folk being linked with the job. Bergkamp, Bielsa.
Hoddle's Hoddle. One.
Oh, yeah.
Former Sunderland midfielder Steve Agnew, who's the number two at Hull, the number two at Everton, and the AN other whose name escapes me.
Well, so, I would say Sven Göran Eriksson, but it's funny how he's no longer getting linked with his jobs. It's a disappointment, really.
Yeah.
Cardiff, in the meantime, arriving very much on a roll after their victory over Norwich, with Marshall looking good in goal and Wilfried Zaha getting rave reviews. And posing that question again about why David Moyes, all sorts of colourful internet theories about this, about why David Moyes didn't want to use him. But in football,
colourful theories which have been emphatically denied by Wilfried Zaha.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, he looks like a useful addition for Cardiff.
It's a bit like throwing a firework into a crowded room, and that you know, it's things are going to happen, not necessarily good things.
I'm trying to think what good things could happen if you threw a firework into
I haven't
a
really
room.
Thought this through, to be honest.
It depends who's in the room.
I'm going to backtrack a bit.
Arguably.
He is very, very tricksy and very, very quick, but sometimes so tricksy and so quick that even he doesn't know what is going on. And I'm not sure that Moyes really liked that spontaneity.
Right.
Because I think he used him in the Community Shield, didn't he, in the first game, and not very much after that. But where Cardiff are and the position they're in, where they're desperately searching for anything to change the dirge, he's probably going to work out quite nicely.
Well, they're in the bottom three. They're in 19th place. But a win in this, and they won last time, would take them level with Swansea. Poof, eh? It's one of those exciting games where you just don't know what's going to happen. And who's going to be the next manager to walk in the Premier League? Our fingers are pointing at René Molenstein. Are they now?
They are, though Rio Ferdinand on Twitter yesterday was raising that question himself.
What did he say? What did Rio
say? He just said, oh, Laudrup's gone, I wonder who's going to be next to go. And if he could have added like an arched, raised eyebrow and maybe some chin stroking and some then perhaps he would have done. It seemed, and I might be wrong, but it seemed like he might be, you know, making hints at his own manager.
Well, if you ever wanted a result to fire someone over, arguably the 1-0 defeat against Sheffield United at home against a team, what, second bottom in the third tier?
Second bottom of the third
division. That was fielding a reserve side.
It doesn't bode well, does it? Mm. And there's a lovely little circle here with Muhlenstein coming in to assist. Muhlenstein coming in to assist Martin Jol.
Yes.
And then Alan Kerbishley coming in to assist Muhlenstein.
Yes.
And then Ray Wilkins is
in to assist Alan Kerbishley.
It's just people lined up with knives at each other's backs. Big knife conga.
Yeah, and the way they've been playing suggests that there is too many cooks, because they, even in the short period of time that Muhlenstein has normally been in charge.
Muhlenstein.
Yeah, whatever. You know who I mean. They've tinkered and modified with their style, formation, personnel and everything. But, of course, they have just brought in a load of new players who will probably be making their debut at Old Trafford. Mitroglou, obviously, much needed.
I'm excited about that.
Yeah, and Lewis Hopi, who didn't make much of an impression, actually, against Southampton last week. But I thought their holding midfielder, William Kvist who also made his debut against... He was impressive.
He was impressive.
For as long as he lasted, but he hasn't been playing much recently.
They brought somebody else
in
at the back, didn't they?
Yeah, Ryan Tunnicliffe and Larnell Cole from United came in as well.
Well, that's handy, because they're going to be at United this weekend. They're very much bottom of the table with 14 games to go.
And Fulham are the easiest team in the league to play against if you're in opposition. So you'd expect that if David Moyes is ever going to deploy the highly promising front four of Van Persie, Rooney, Mata and Januzaj, it'll be against Fulham.
Why are Fulham the easiest team to play against?
Because they're so open.
Right.
And don't have the energy that every other team in the league has, at least.
Fulham have conceded 18 goals in their last six league games.
Man United feel comfortable they're going to get back to winning ways against Cottagers, etc.
I was just going to say, I thought that against Stoke. Stoke had picked up 1 point in six games.
Right.
Stoke were there for the taking.
Mm.
Put the apple in their own mouth. I don't understand Manchester United anymore. If they can't get a result there, I can't get my head around how bad they must be.
Well, Stoke are going to be at Southampton, a game that you will be attending, Paul Doyle. Huh. Hey, Begovic scored last time these teams met.
He did, and that might be their best hope again.
Right.
Southampton are just a good team, and they especially going forward, and they should beat Stoke.
Yeah, they've kind of got back on track a bit, haven't they, Southampton?
Yeah, they have. They're starting to get their injured players back, although Victor Wanyama, when he returned to the side against Fulham at the weekend, was visibly short of fitness, and the reintroduction of Jack Cork in his place was essentially what laid the platform for Southampton's emphatic second half victory.
And the goals of Lallana, Rodriguez and Lambert, of course.
Yeah, all three of whom should be going to the World Cup, in my view.
Right, excellent. Sunderland are going to be taking on Hull, Barry, the Steve Bruce derby. What kind of reception will the Stadium of Light offer, Steve?
Not a very good one, I would imagine. I'd say they won't care about him at this stage.
They've got bigger fish to fry.
Well, Ian used to live up that neck of the woods. He'd have a better idea than me, but I don't think they need...
I think the him being a Newcastle fan when he was a kid thing was overplayed about. I don't think Sunderland fans really cared too much about that. I think it was more excuses and recurring injuries that seemed to be caused by bringing players back too soon, was their view, not necessarily my view. And then, you know, eventually just results. Sunderland under Bruce had a knack of playing really well for about 20 minutes of every game, which just wasn't enough.
Well, the Sunderland team is doing well now. It's still largely based on his signings, though. And there were three wins and a draw, isn't it, coming into this? And the massive win in the derby last weekend.
His tenure there ended badly, as most managers' tenures end badly, but he did okay for a couple of years.
All right. And Hull, they're in a bit of trouble. 1 point and one goal scored in five games now. So they're only 2 points off the drop zone themselves. Just to remind you, listeners, the entire bottom half of the table are all within the defeat of being in the relegation zone.
Well, Hull have lost their last three and failed to score their last three away from home. Shane Long scored last week for them, so you know, he's just in. He's not a prolific goal scorer, but if Jelovic, who also looked good, if one of them can start banging them in, Hull should be okay. They also have big sensation, Jake Livermore back. So Roy Hodgson is apparently going to go and watch the game with a view to just monitoring Adam Johnson's recent resurgence, and presumably cast an eye over Tom Huddleston as well.
Why not? Why not? Other relegation games include Aston Villa, West Ham, Norwich, Man City, and Palace, West Brom, which is an authentic six-pointer, isn't it? Norwich, Man City, that one was 7-0 at the Etihad. But, of course, City will come into this shaken by that Chelsea defeat.
They can be beaten.
Yeah. How about that, Norwich? Go for it. Aston Villa, West Ham, no. Andy Carroll, because his appeal against the red card was overturned, so he's going to be out, which means Kevin Nolan's going to be sulking, and Villa are not very good at home, so all to play for in that one. What about?
Oh, see, but just on the subject of that, Chico Flores has been baiting West Ham fans on Twitter.
He won't let it lie, will he?
No,
he's calling their side ugly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, Crystal Palace, as I say, West Brom, authentic six-pointer. They're both on 23 points on 16th and 17th. But we'll talk about interesting players coming in. Jode Ledley and Thomas Ince, potentially, to start for Palace. Anyone excited by that?
Yeah, just a bit. I saw Palace at the Emirates on Sunday. Mm. And it was kind of like an art form, the way they defended. It was, for the first half, they were superb. They were never really ruffled.
Right. The art form being...
I don't know. You know, like when people bang all those bin lids together for that musical stomp.
Stomp.
You're
yeah.
kind of impressed. The
synchronized.
Yeah,
yeah.
But after about 10 minutes, you're basically, well, this is just a load of people banging bin lids, isn't it? And you kind of go off and watch something else.
So that was River Dance is kind of the same.
Yeah, yeah. Along a similar theme. You're impressed for a bit, but you don't really.
And
want
then
to spend
you hate
all day
yourself
watching
for
it.
Being impressed because it's. Actually rubbish.
Right. Did you hate yourself for being impressed by
Stoke? I did
Stoke?
A bit. Yeah, I
had Stoke.
Palace.
Crystal Palace.
Yeah. No, I had a word with myself at half time and but it was they kept Arsenal kind of at arm's length like that at the edge of the penalty area.
Yeah, it's just extended it up. In case anyone was confused about this whole arm's length business.
I'm not having a good day today. And then, you know, it obviously eventually all fell away. But they have a very strong, very disciplined, very organised team. Mm. They get narrow. They block teams out. Arsenal couldn't fire. I think they fired off about two shots in the first half before they finally got there in the second. So you add a bit of width and a bit of flair to that, a little bit of an improvement. And, you know, the way it is down there, they could go mid-table.
Crikey. Whoa, I'm looking forward to that game then. You know, that was part one. And it was a slight experiment. We went with the relegation sides and all that kind of thing in part one, which you may feel has been an underwhelming beginning. But I don't know. I think it's a slow burner. We're really going to reach intensity when we come to the big, big games in part two. Stick around. See what you think, listeners.
Someone should throw a couple of fireworks in here.
Yeah. This is where we reach the red-hot intensity level. As we pick up on the Chelsea-Newcastle... Chelsea taking on a Newcastle side reeling from the departure of Joe Kinnear. That's a big,
it's a
hole.
It's a massive loss. You know, there's just no activity there. It's like Wonka Towers. There's no smoke from the chimneys, no shadows behind the window. No, it's that they've just wasted 8 months. Two transfer windows completely wasted through no real obvious gain, apart from this theory that came from a business journalist that Mike Ashley likes to... attain progress through chaos. He likes key members of his staff to fear for their jobs at all times. And so the theory is that Joe Kinnear was there to scare Pardew into getting his act together because perhaps there was a perception of lethargy and complacency that had set in, which seems a high-risk tactic.
Mm.
Though, in fairness, given that Newcastle are eighth and they almost got relegated last year, perhaps it worked to a certain extent.
So Kinnear was a counterbalance to the 10-year contract.
If I do something this crazy, think what else I could do. Yeah. That kind of thing.
Well, anyway, he's gone now.
Yes.
And no news yet as to which club he's going to be joining. But we'll stand by. Stand
well,
by
the
for
official
more of that.
Line is that he resigned, but I read in one of the local papers in the northeast that he was asked to stand down.
Hmm.
And the article seemed quite well informed. And he was asked to stand down because apparently Mike Ashley wasn't happy with the terms of the Yohan Cabaye PSG deal, even though he made a huge profit on him.
Hmm.
Yeah, I think apparently
not a big enough profit.
Yeah, or maybe he was happy with the fee, but
I think he wasn't. The version I read was that he wasn't happy with the fee.
Oh, okay.
Right. But he did one deal, and he got that wrong. So, that's Newcastle, who are going to be at Stamford Bridge. And Chelsea, of course, were magnificent against Man City on Monday. Any thoughts on that? Probably all saw it. Did you see that, Paul? Chelsea at Man City?
I saw it, yeah.
Chelsea were magnificent against Man City on Monday?
They were, yeah. They were absolutely dominant.
What happened there? How did they take this invincible at home City side and vince them?
Well, one of the interesting things about the Premier League this season is that every team has at least one obvious flaw.
Ah.
And City's, of course, has been their defence, which was further weakened by the fact that one of the vital screens in front of it, Fernandinho, was missing. And Chelsea exploited that perfectly, with Matic making a superb return to the Premier League alongside David Luiz, and bullied Yaya Toure, who was almost left abandoned to himself in the middle. They dominated the match, and even though they didn't have the lethal centre forward, which is Chelsea's obvious shortcoming, they still strangled City and could have won it even more convincingly, which was a pity in one way, because just this is what makes Mourinho so great. Just as he sets himself up to the point where at last we can ridicule him, he pulls off a big result like that.
Yeah.
Because in the weeks beforehand, he'd come out with some of the most amazing examples of hypocrisy ever. Even by his standards, and then you can't slag him off when he gets away with it.
Yeah, thanks to his masseur, of course.
yeah.
Anyway, that was nice. Now, he had some interesting comments post game. A, the fact that the masseur had given the halftime team talk, but I think everyone's talked about that, and also this brilliant horse analogy that they're a little baby horse, a foal, if you like, that still needs milk and hasn't learned how to jump yet.
I know that. All supporters of small teams like myself will identify with that feeling and send our pity to Chelsea and hope that they can overcome these times of adversity.
Mm. Yeah. Well,
I can't remember the year, the early to mid-90s, the Grand National was won by a horse called Seagram, who was tiny, teeny tiny little horse.
That's interesting, isn't it? So you think maybe it could happen
much
again in the Premier League?
Much smaller than all the other horses.
Right.
Like a Shetland pony.
But he had learned to jump, and that's why he won.
How small? Like a Shetland pony.
Well, he was
size
not Shetland ponies, but he was noticeably smaller than most of the opposition.
Mm. There you go, Jose.
Joe's are taking inspiration from Mühlenstein there, comparing himself to an animal.
Oh, yeah, that's
team,
true.
Rather.
That's true. And it's interesting how, Willian, a lot of comment about Willian and how important he's become. You know, looked like Oscar and Hazard were the key figures for. But then Willian comes in, and is he. Is it Hazard still, or is Willian now the guy for Chelsea?
Well, the greatest thing with Willian was that the trick that Mourinho had pulled on everyone. Mm. He's an insufferable tit, but you have to take your hat off to how much of a genius he is with the press.
Mm.
He had everyone convinced he was going to use that formation where he was going to play three central midfielders, as he did against Arsenal, as he did away against Manchester United, where he would drop Oscar to the bench and just have Willian and Hazard as wide men. And when the team sheet came out, everyone still went along, yeah, he's going to play the three in the middle. But Willian, of course, was playing off the striker through the centre, and with that pace, and he couldn't have known that Fernandinho was injured, but when he saw the team sheet and realised it was Di Michaelis in the gap there, he must have laughed his head off, because there was just no stopping Willian. I think it was Jonathan Wilson in The Guardian this week said, when was the last time you saw a team go 4-1 in the 27th minute on the counter-attack? The tactics were just absolutely superb.
Well, speaking of, you know, people you hate to take your hat off to, Raphael Honigstein, they're calling Chelsea perhaps the best counter-attackers in Europe, and they certainly looked like that on Monday. Sammy Silva, or Sammy F. Silva, says, where do the pods stand on Yaya Toure?
Well, I just, listening to Paul there saying that he was bullied, which, and he was, but the notion of some, you know, this machine, like cyborg-type machine, such as him being bullied is preposterous, but no, I think he's a good player. He didn't have a good game the other night, and he was left a bit exposed.
Yeah, he was kind of outnumbered, and I think he's a brilliant player.
Hmm?
But
I feel
he can't
gets
do it all by himself.
Yeah, this is Sammy F. Silva. I feel he gets an easy ride from most football fans who assume that due to his size and undoubted ability that he dominates midfield. While clearly able to do this, he seems to spend most of the game jogging slowly around the pitch rather than in the thick of the action. Was this not the case when Matic and Luiz dominated the midfield from start to end on Monday night?
I think jogging slowly round the pitch is a bit harsh.
He does do that a lot, though, doesn't he?
Well, sometimes when you know he's pushed so far up that the game is now 20 yards behind him. But most of the time he is doing an awful lot of clanking. I think the thing he needs is the wingman, Fernandinho.
Right.
He needs that person orbiting him and covering for those
runs. That's a wingman, not necessarily
runs.
On the wing. It's just a wingman.
Yes, in an RAF kind of
right.
way. On your wing tip. Just in case, right. attacks from the sun, that kind of thing.
Right.
I think that poster is guilty of what he's accusing others of. He thinks just because Touré is big, he should be the enforcer.
Right.
His skills are different.
They certainly are. Now, anyway, that was Man City-Chelsea, which has left things very tight at the top. You've got those two level on points now, and Arsenal 2 points ahead. They're involved in a tasty matchup this weekend, as are Spurs, Ian, who are hosting Everton, two top four rivals going head-to-head there. You're going along to what?
Yeah, I'll be there for that, which is bad news for Tim Sherwood, because I've done three Tottenham games since he took over, and he's lost all of them.
Uh-huh.
So I imagine security will want to stop me at the gate.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
If they're listening. They may not.
In football terms, how does this one set up?
It depends what kind of Tottenham you see. They're so inconsistent. They had that wonderful run in the league with 5 wins and a draw from 6 games, but interspersed with appalling displays against Arsenal and West Ham in the League Cup. They still seem to be searching for an identity. Sherwood has gradually kind of relinquished the 4-4-2 and come into more of a 4-2-3-1, but you wonder if there's the cover when they're caught on the counter. If all goes well for them, if they score early, they could very easily win this, but you also look at that team and you see so many weaknesses that you think they could, well, you know, be in for a beating, as they were
true.
Against Man City.
Hmm. Everton, of course, no Lukaku. It didn't matter last weekend. They were at home to... Was it West Brom they were at
Villa.
Home to? Villa, that's right.
Though, also displaying their own defensive vulnerabilities, particularly with young John Stones coming in for Seamus Coleman and,
right.
and finding it a little bit of a tricky step up for the moment. And they have pushed, as we saw against Liverpool, they're pushing forward so often, leaving huge acres of space behind them, which is the kind of thing that you know Tottenham will be looking to exploit. One sad note, though, Tony Hibbert, one of my favourite players in the Premier League, he's only played 3 minutes this season. If you're looking for a way to shore up the right flank of Everton's team, albeit by sacrificing all intent of getting forward, Tony Hibbert, the answer is there.
In those 3 minutes, how many times did he shuttle forward 5 yards, then shuttle backwards 5 yards?
And then look around a bit and make sure everything's all right, and then repeat.
Yeah.
Yeah, quite a lot, I think.
Oh, good.
Why is he one of your all-time favourite players?
I just love the way that he's so reliable, and that when other footballers appear on the front pages of newspapers or on fashion magazines or with models draped off their arm, the only evidence of Tony Hibbert appearing in anything that isn't a sports pages is on the front of Angler's Weekly holding a gigantic fish.
Really?
Yeah.
Is he a good angler?
He loves it. It's massive, this fish, the size of a family car.
Really?
Well, it wasn't really that big.
Hmm.
It depends how big your family
is. No, but
it was a big fish.
A big fish.
I couldn't have eaten it all in one.
Okay.
Well, I would presume he threw it back.
I think that's
so
the rules,
you wouldn't
isn't it?
Have been able to eat it.
Well, yeah.
Is that what anglers do? They throw their catch back?
Oh, very much so, yeah.
Okay.
Jimmy Bullard is also a champion angler.
Is that so?
Mm-hmm.
Because I knew about footballers and golf, but I had no idea that
Jimmy Bullard is a champion angler and plays off scratch in golf. He's almost good enough to be a pro golfer.
Wow. Here's producer Ben suggesting that, from the music world, Dappy is a champion angler. Dappy. Okay, maybe he's not a champion, says producer Ben, but he's been on the front of Anglers Weekly.
The lead singer of Marillion.
Fish? Are you joking because his name's Fish, or is he actually an angler?
You got it.
All right, okay. Anyway, now, we haven't talked about Liverpool Arsenal yet, have we? Amidst all that fish chat?
Not really, no.
Liverpool Arsenal then. Right. Here's Lewis Britton-Jones says, is Arsenal-Liverpool a season definer for both teams? I hope it is. I love season definers.
You'd think so, and I think Liverpool have the edge. They're at home, Flamini's still suspended, Ramsey's still out, Wilshere is a big doubt.
Mm-hmm.
Who else? And their Swedish Volvo is in for its MOT. It won't be out of the garage before, you know. So Arsenal, I fancy Liverpool to win this.
Really?
Yeah.
They're the only team that stopped Sturridge and Suarez scoring.
True.
Liverpool are really weak in midfield.
Mm.
Jordan Henderson is all they've got, really, and Arsenal have an excellent midfield. There's no, outside Suarez, possibly Coutinho and Sturridge, there's no Liverpool player that would get in the Arsenal side.
Right. Lucas is out.
Yeah.
Mm.
Gerrard is waning. And Arsenal should dominate in midfield and therefore win.
All right.
I was at the Emirates in November, and that's exactly what they did. And Liverpool had Lucas that day, none of them could keep up with Arsenal's passing. The game just bypassed them completely. So with Lucas out, with Liverpool not having a particularly great record against the top teams, I'd go for Arsenal. In fact, someone on the internet was telling me it was about 4-1 for an Arsenal win.
Well, it's a big game that, and Arsenal, of course, as we mentioned, 2 points clear with 14 games to go. Could it happen? Could it? A couple of posts for you. Hermiston says Aberdeen reach a cup final in God knows how long. Is it worth a shout out? Is it worth a shout out, Aberdeen, in a cup final?
I didn't even know.
There you go. Ian, did you know this?
I knew, but I don't know.
Do you know
anything.
Which cup final it is?
It's one of the Scottish ones.
There you go. Paul?
I would.
Are they playing Inverness Cali?
Well, good for you. Made the best team win. Well done. All right, well, let's have a little bit of music and then launch into a roundup of all sorts of other stuff. Other stuff, miscellany, if you like, from the wide world of football. Here's another bit of Scottish news, actually. Eric Jemba Jemba signing for St Mirren.
Hmm. Where? From where?
I don't know. Anybody know from where?
No, but I saw on the back pages of one of the Scottish papers, he said the headline was something like, "Now I can prove Sir Alex Wright." And it just seems a little late. It would have been good to do that maybe 10 years ago.
Okay.
When he was playing for him.
I can exclusively reveal he signed from Partizan Belgrade.
Okay.
Now, while we're on the subject of all things continental, how about the Eredivisie? You thought it was tight in the Premier League. Well, over in Holland, or the Netherlands rather, the top four are separated by 4 points. You've got Ajax on top on 44. They had an 8-game winning run, which was halted by a 1-1 draw with Utrecht last weekend. Oh, no, midweek, actually. Then you've got Twente, who are second, and then Vitesse Arnhem, and then Feyenoord, as I say, 4 points off the top themselves. So it's wide open. Let's speak now to our friend Michael Jongsma from Benefoot.net and also Opta, who joins us now on the line.
Hey, James.
Hi, Michael. How are you?
You are quite well. Can't complain, so.
Okay. Yeah. Good stuff. It's quite an exciting title race you got going on over there. Is it because teams are very good or very bad this year?
Well, it's kind of hard to say. I think the Eredivisie isn't as good as it used to be, of course. But on the other hand, Ajax did beat Barcelona this season, and last season Manchester City failed to win against them twice. So there is some quality in the league left still. And well, Frank de Boer at Ajax is doing a smashing job. And when you look at the FC 20 side that is in second place currently, it has quite some quality players as well. And I wouldn't be surprised to see a few of them join the bigger leagues and actually make an impression as well. So it's hard to tell. And Vitesse, obviously quite known for the Chelsea connection, is playing some very pleasing football as well. They've been going through a bit of a slump. But a player like Lucas Piazon is just looking phenomenal for them. So it's quite decent this year, actually.
In his book, Zlatan Ibrahimovic mentions that when he was at Ajax, all the young players there were desperate to leave and go somewhere else. Is that still the case?
At Ajax, definitely not, because Frank de Boer is doing a terrific job over there. They've won the league for 3 times in a row, and they could go for a 4th time, which would be unique in Ajax history. Quite some young players are quite comfortable with working with him, and as long as he's at Ajax, they're quite likely to keep the squad together. And well, the job he has done this season, again, I mean, he has lost players like Eriksen and Alderweireld, but has filled those gaps up with players like Joel Veldman, who's a Dutch international already, and Davy Klaassen, who's just looking a great number 10 for Ajax again. So I don't think they're that adamant to leave as they were 10 years ago.
Mike, it's all tight at the top, but what the hell's going on with PSV Eindhoven? They're back in 7th?
Yeah, well, they started the season off just in terrific form, and everybody was raving about all the youth players that came through. But after 4 or 5 games, well, the success story of Philippe Cocu came to a halt, and they did win yesterday 2-1, but it was a very hard-fought victory over promotion side Cambuur, and they just look quite clueless, to be frank.
There seems to be a lot of managers leaving at the end of this season as well. They're like Ronald Koeman's stepping down from Feyenoord, and there's talk. Is there not of Van Basten leaving Heerenveen and Dick Advocaat Alkmaar, maybe Louis van Gaal too? From a very Premier League centrico type of viewpoint, are any of those maybe going to be making a move over here?
Well, Advocaat has been quite clear that if he isn't sure what he's going to do next season, but it will be either AZ or his boyhood club out of Den Haag, but Martin Jol is in for their job as well, apparently. And otherwise, he'd like to move abroad, and I think for him, the Premier League would be a final chapter in his career that he'd very much enjoy. Van Gaal has already announced that he won't be the Dutch manager next season, and there has been talk about Tottenham Hotspur, and I think he still very much would like to move there. With Van Basten, it's a bit of a strange one. He's not had the best of managerial career so far, but he's always been thought of very highly within the AC Milan club. And, well, I'm not sure he's a Premier League manager, but I do think he's an intelligent man who can actually do something different with a good footballing side. Maybe something like Swansea could suit him. And with Ronald Koeman, he's definitely one I'd tip to become a Premier League manager somewhere near, probably next season.
All right, very interesting. Can you tell us a little bit, Heerenveen's Icelandic striker, is it Alfred Finn Bogason, who's the top scorer? Now, Barry's got an interesting theory about goals in Holland being a little bit like dog years, Michael. You know the way that, say, a dog year is seven, is it? Is it Barry?
But basically, that three or four goals in Holland equals one goal in Bundesliga or the Premier League.
Because people have had their fingers burned with one or two top scorers from the Eredivisie in the past, but then there have been others been super, like Luis Suarez. So which kind is Alfred Finn Bogason?
Finn Bogason was really near a move to the Premier League this winter. Fulham were willing to pay €10 million for him. And that was the initial asking price from Heerenveen, but they pulled out because they couldn't just lose their striker at the transfer deadline day. And that left Finn Bogason slightly furious.
I think he dodged a bullet, to be honest.
I don't see why he was that keen to move there as well, to be honest. But Finn Bogason is being very smart, and he's a very good finisher, and I would like to see him at a good footballing side, because I do think that if you go to a mid-table team in the Premier League, you're bound to struggle anyway as a striker. So maybe for something like Everton, he'd be a good fit, I think. But if he would end up at, well, you just name a team that's basically only defending, I think he'd struggle there as much as any other striker would do.
Michiel Jongsma, and there you go. It's Finn Bogason.
Finn Bogason.
Finn Bogason.
Merlinstein.
Merlinstein. Stein, for goodness sake. Right, that's the Eredivisie. In other exciting developments in football this week, you got David Beckham turning up in Miami. I bet you were excited about that, Paul.
Very excited, yeah. I see he hasn't chosen a name for his team yet.
That's one of the many interesting questions that's still unresolved.
It has to be Miami Spice, doesn't it?
Spice. Miami Spice, because Miami Vice would work.
And, of course, the basketball team is Miami Heat. So yes. He could just be Miami Feet.
Miami Feet. Have you been working hard on these?
Yes.
What other one?
He was also introduced by the mayor of Miami as David Beckman.
Right, okay.
Which I would imagine didn't please him greatly.
Anyway, now in Spain, meantime, we're heading towards another Clásico because Barcelona beat Real Sociedad with a brilliant own goal. Did you see the own goal? The ball, I can't remember why the ball was out wide there, but the defender decides to try and clear it, and he clears it back across goal where it hits the goalkeeper, who's returning towards his own net, in the face and bounces into the goal. and there was much rejoicing. Anyway, that was 2-0 for Barcelona. Real Madrid, meantime, had a derby with Atletico in their semi-final, and they won 3-0.
That was pretty brutal game.
Mm-hmm. You watched that one, did you?
Yeah, Sergio Ramos and Pepe are just... What did, a pair of pieces of work. I have a heroic regard for them, to be honest. I can't stay mad at them for all, but God, they're vile.
Did Pepe blow his nose all over one of his opponents? There seemed to be a screen grab indicating that.
Well, Diego Costa was just bullied throughout. Right. And at one stage, I think it was Alvaro Arbeloa, raked his foot down the back of his leg and onto his Achilles.
Ooh.
And Diego Costa eventually lost it and got booked. And Pepe then just laughed in his face. Now, whether there was an exchange of it with saliva or anything, I don't know. But
I don't know either. He's out for the second leg. I should mention that there is a return game in each case to happen. But Real 3-0 up from their first game, and Barcelona 2-0 from there. So it does look like we're heading for another of those Classico things. In France, with the League Cup, and PSG beat Nantes. Zlatan scored twice. That's now 32 goals in 33 for Zlatan this season for club and country. Extraordinary, eh? Extraordinary. I'm looking forward to the sequel of his book, because there's plenty of interesting things you can talk about there.
Yeah. He sent a T-shirt to Cristiano Ronaldo for his birthday.
Dare to Zlatan.
Yeah.
It takes a hell of an ego to use your first name as a verb, doesn't it?
Does anyone else do that? I'm wondering.
I don't think so.
To peter out.
To peter out.
Nice.
Brilliant
nice.
Stuff. To bob. Yeah. I'm just going to rustle up some food. Yeah. There's all sorts of examples.
To sally
this
forth.
This isn't... there's...
I'm hopelessly out of my depth.
Yeah. We've dug ourselves to a new low. Yeah. But anyway, no, what you're talking about is something different. It's not just simple punning on names. You're saying to, you know, to jimbo something.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Imagine if
wibble
you walked
around
in
without actually getting to the heart of the story.
If you yeah. ordered us to jimbo this show,
yeah.
then we'd probably be going, that seems
okay,
a bit much. Okay,
let's bury this
chap.
Pig, you know. Yeah. You know, you being from a veterinarian
right, okay.
persuasion and that. It's an interesting thought, that. So far we've got to Zlatan, dare to Zlatan. And listeners, if you know of any other examples, then you do let us know.
To Pollock it up could be to score an outrageous own goal.
Right.
And in memory of Jamie Pollock, of course.
To Bramble.
Oh, yes, to Bramble.
There you go. Now, I was talking about French football and that, and I should mention, listeners would feel disappointed if I didn't, that this weekend, it's very much a top-of-the-table showdown en Ligue 1, where Monaco, who are in second place, deuxième place, will be hosting PSG. Wow. And not only will this feature, one would have to imagine, the aforementioned Zlatan with his 32 goals and 33 games for club and country, but it also might see the debut for the Monégasques of
Dimitar Berbatov.
And he surely has got to be a player whose first name can be used as a verb.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It would mean something to do with jazz and smoking tabs.
Wow. Cool. That's huge.
Also bear witness to a truly extraordinary spectacle. A full Stade Louis-II.
Do you think they might fill it back
in the
place?
It's sold out.
Have they sold it out?
Yeah.
Bless.
Yeah. It's far from certain that Berbatov will start.
I can imagine.
Because in Falcao's absence... Mm.
Germain,
Valère Germain, who was probably Monaco's best player last year, and then didn't get a look in this season, but he's come back into the fold and done really well.
All right, so it could be Germain against Saint-Germain.
Yeah,
very,
indeed.
Very exciting. Yeah. And Riviere's been doing brilliantly as well for them. And to be honest, Monaco, when they turn it on, can look very good up front, but they've kind of wandered around the pitch too often.
It's another of those matches where I think midfield will be the decisive factor, right. And PSG are so strong, and they've even added Kabay, of course.
Listeners, I bet by now you think, this sounds sensational. Where can I watch it? Where can I watch it? Well, if you can bear to sit through all the goals from Italy, Germany and France first, get through all of that, around about 7:45, 8 o'clock, it'll be live on BT Sport.
Will you have
Philippe Auclair will be here on Monday to tell us all about it, just in case you miss it.
Monsieur Joey Barton be
I don't think he is, as far as I know, but he might be. Hey, tune in and find out. In Italy, there was also cup action there, and a fantastic game between Roma and Napoli at the Stadio Olimpico. They managed to drain the pitch sufficiently for them to get this game on. Only the first leg, but Roma in sensational form. Two goals from Gervinho. Alistair Kerr tweeting, did Gervinho just not fancy it in England? England question mark? Because it's extraordinary how he's just become a revelation there. Because he reunited with Rudy Garcia, who was his boss at Lille, to great effect. But it's remarkable how well. And two good goals yesterday. But did you see Strootman's goal?
No.
Oh. It was, what's that word you like using?
A thunderbastard.
It was, from about 30 yards out. Boom! Can I mention Bologna? You probably saw this story about their late signing on transfer deadline day, the Brazilian holding midfielder Ibsen. They signed him really late on deadline day and forgot to pick him up at the airport.
They've suspended four members of their
coaching
team.
Two of them have now been allowed back into the team. The club's in a real mess, to be fair, Bologna. They are in all sorts of problems. They've changed manager, and the new guy, Ballardini, hasn't had a win and that. And I think their minds were elsewhere on transfer deadline day, because they've been trying to hold on to Diamanti, their main player, basically, who looks like he still might go to Guangzhou, something like that. I get confused. We changed it so many times. I'm going with Guangzhou. Anyway, and then none of these people, nobody realised whose job it was to go and pick up the new fellow, who arrived at Fiumicino down in Rome and just stood there going...
What did he do? Did he just find a coffee bar
That's
wait?
Not been made clear. I imagine that he must have had a contact number and he called the club and said, I'm Ibsen. No, Ibsen. you bought me on the transfer deadline. Somebody there bought me on transfer deadline day. Can you send a car? But he must be, you know, when you talk about low confidence, I was reading that apparently Corinthians fans in Brazil, after you know, the sale was completed on transfer deadline day, held up a banner in their next game thanking Bologna for liberating them. Robson. It's not good, is it? There's no call for that kind of thing.
And then he gets left abandoned at the airport. That's not going to help.
No.
Oh, on the subject of Italy, the Cagliari owner... Massimo Cellino.
Yes.
I'm getting there. looks like he's going to take over Leeds.
Does, doesn't it?
And will pass the fit and proper persons test because his convictions for fraud were more than 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So David Kahn, top journalist, was telling me that, much as I'd like to take the credit for this knowledge myself, I just had a quick chat with him before I came up here.
Oh, nice.
And, the fit and proper persons... test is tied very tightly to English law. So,
right.
And in English law, if your fraud conviction is more, or conviction, I think, I'm not sure if it's for fraud or everything, but fraud anyway, is more than 10 years old, then you don't have to sort of mention it on CVs.
Well, there you go. You know, so. And as regards his the investigation into embezzling, that's, he's not been found guilty yet, so they can't do him for that. And, you know, it's interesting. Somebody was tweeting today, would you trust Cellino with your football club? And I know he does seem to be completely a wronger, but I'm still not entirely sure about that, because there is an argument that he at Cagliari has actually been quite ambitious and has looked to do good things, but has been continually thwarted by these bureaucracy, I'm guessing, but the unwillingness of the local council to allow him to develop the stadium. And that's been a real issue and has basically hampered them enormously. It might be that if he's now deciding to come to Leeds to explore and fulfil his ambitions a little bit more fully than he was allowed to do in Sardinia, that he could do something interesting with Leeds. But it is a real shot in the dark, and I wish him the best of luck.
How is Gianluca Festa regarded as a potential manager?
That's caught everyone a little bit by surprise, I think. He's not really someone who was regarded as a rising star of Italian management, but interesting times, as we were saying indeed on Monday. That's pretty much it for today's show. Barry, you'll be returning to the airwaves on Sunday morning in the ratings-tastic TalkSport Sunday morning slot.
Yep.
Cool. Ian, where can we see you next?
White Hart Lane press box. If the camera's pointing sort of behind Tim Sherwood and to an angle,
right,
I'll be the one who absolutely isn't playing Football Manager on his laptop.
Okay, then. And Paul, what have you got in the works that listeners might like to know about?
I'm under orders.
Ah.
To plug the World Cup Fiverr.
Oh, what is that, Paul?
It's called O'Fiverr-Ow.
O'Fiverr-Ow.
Yeah.
Right, okay, good.
It's like the Fiverr.
But it's about the World Cup.
It's coming in on a weekly basis, right. Every Thursday, I think.
Super. All right, well, I look forward to it. And today being Thursday, does that mean that the first one's out today?
That's the plan.
Okay, well, have a look for that, listeners. I'll be around doing European football throughout the weekend, in fact. So I'm all over that European thing. And also, I'm going to go and have a look at the newspapers and see if there's anything worth talking about in that. So maybe that'll be there as well on Friday. And we'll all be back on Monday with Philippe Auclair to talk about the weekend's action.
So basically he'll be talking and we'll just be sitting here listening.
Something like that, yeah. Barry. Something like that. Nice one. Enjoy
it's
the weekend.
Grand. I like when Philippe's on because you don't have to do any preparation.
Well, absolutely.
He just says everything.
Yeah. Very good. Now, we'll be off then. See you soon. Bye-bye.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, drag and drop tools, and 24/7 support. Squarespace also offers seamless e-commerce solutions for you or your small business. Every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience that matches the overall style of your website, so your content will look brilliant on any device. Start your free trial today. No credit card required. As a Guardian podcast listener, you'll get 10% off your new account by using the offer code Guardian.